Thanks for joining me. I'm Kara Lawrence, and today I'm welcoming Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra assistant conductor Daniel Breyer into the studio. He'll be talking about the upcoming concert on Saturday at Chanery Auditorium called Schubert's Fifth. But the concerto on the program features an international star of the solo guitar, Pablo Sanz Villegas, and he is joining us too. Welcome, Daniel. Welcome, Pablo. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
This Saturday's concert begins at 8 p.m. If you have tickets, to turn up at 7 o'clock for an introduction to the music and stick around afterward for After Words. Would that be with the conductor?
Yes, I will be there, and likely you will be there. And I actually am really excited about this After Words idea that our new music director brought to town with him when he came to town. And it's a great opportunity when you're sitting in the hall and experiencing all of this music, maybe for the first time, maybe it's the 35th time you've heard it, whatever it is, there's all these things that go through your mind, and then you wish you could remember all of the things you wanted to know, but 5 minutes right afterwards, you can ask us. And if we don't have the answer, we'll figure it out for you. We'll find one.
Well, you're always brimming with reaction, too.
Yes.
And you want to say the first stupid thing that comes into your head, and we can say it.
Exactly. Right? And there's no such thing as a stupid question there.
I was reminded of underwater circuses.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine.
That's perfectly fine. And really, it's a way to validate your experience in the concert hall, in a way for us to help you enjoy it. And the other thing that we've found that it is for our patrons, that they get to explore what it's like to put it all together, because then you can start to ask questions like, you know, with the concerto, was that difficult to put together? And then we can talk about the process of putting it together. Or a lot of times we'll get questions about what we do for in our daily lives. And we enjoy talking about these types of things. So
for me, strategically, as an audience member, I know that all of you musicians are worn out and are unguarded and likely to tell me the truth.
Very true.
in the aftermath of a concert, which is a physical event and emotional event, mm-hmm. and you're feeling that afterglow, aftermath, you know, very likely to feel like interacting with people.
And for me, Kara, is an exercise of vulnerability, and to be an artist and to be on a stage is to create in a space to invite the audience to participate. And I think it's fantastic when after the concert, people can be part of that space in a very personal way, because in the end, we're on a stage. We spent years of our lives devoting every single day to that excellence that demands, that art demands. But in the end, we are human beings. And in the end, we invite people to be part of that humanity that brings art into the community.
It helps to balance all that alone time in the practice room with acknowledgement and, you know, we did share something.
Yeah. Well, and it is so valuable for us. If you think about how many years we devote ourselves to practice, and then how much time we are on a stage, probably is like 10% of the 90% that we've practiced at home. So that 10% has to be so valuable to compensate and to give balance to that other 90% that is about excellent, about giving the best of yourself, about bringing or pushing the limits of what you can do as human beings.
My guest is Pablo Sanz Villegas, who is visiting us from his homeland of Spain and will be performing Elmer Bernstein's guitar concerto. If I could back up a little and say how unusual this program is, it has many attractive qualities. For one, probably the biggest one being the chance to hear a guitarist as a soloist. We have seen the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
Correct.
In
yes.
seasons mm-hmm. past performing a concerto, but as a soloist, very rare mm-hmm. to happen. Was it about 15 years ago, Pablo, that you entered a competition, the Tarega competition, and you won the first prize. Would that have been the big point in your career that started you as an international soloist?
Not really. I mean, to build a career, it's creating an ecosystem around you, and competitions can be one of the ingredients, but not necessarily one of the ingredients. There is not a recipe for young musicians to build their careers, but mine it was the way I lived it and created it. Part of it was being part of competitions, and I won that competition when I was a kid. I had this dream when I watched TV to win that competition one day, and I won it. And then one important competition that I won was the Christopher Parker International Guitar Competition in Malibu. And actually, it's very much related to this concerto, because this concerto is dedicated to two Christophers, Christopher Parker on one hand, and Christopher Briner, orchestrator and good friend of Elmer Bernstein. So, and that competition was probably the most important competition ever organized. It was the inaugural competition. It was more than 10 years ago. And I won it, and that proves that dreams exist to be created, to make it real. Mm-hmm. And we are creators. We are all human beings. We are creators, and it requires some ingredients. It requires a determination, passion, and to aim that dream and remind yourself every day what your dreams are. And then, you know, life little by little creates those for you.
I think you said competitions are part of an ecosystem for a musician. And my thoughts turn to friendships, peer relationships, as well as mentor and student relationships that, of course, you must have and must build on. You know, solo guitar is a small world, is it not?
It's small, big is so relative in the end, no? It's a world by itself, but in the end it's a world of music, it's a world of humanity, and the guitar is my instrument to communicate with people, and it is an instrument of the people, because the guitar, being one of the few instruments that is totally linked to a culture and a country, my country, Spain. When the guitar arrives to the Americas in the 16th and 17th century, it became very fast the instrument to transmit the different musical identities of each country. In Argentina, the tango has a guitar, the bossa nova, the samba have a guitar. In Venezuela, in Mexico, in United States, the bluegrass, the country music, the blues, the jazz, they have a guitar. The pop, the rock, the flamenco. That's the value of the guitar. The guitar is the most democratic instrument. It's the instrument of the people. And that's a huge world.
Yeah,
so for me, it's about communication. It's about putting a message in every note I play and creating that garden. And in that garden, I put seeds. And I've been putting seeds all my life. And then some of those seeds grow up. And then you start building your own garden, and then you invite people to participate of that garden.
I'm speaking with Pablo Sainz Villegas, who is a soloist for this Saturday's concert with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. The work that you'll be playing is Elmer Bernstein's Guitar Concerto. And I want to save that for a little later, because at the opening of the concert, if I may indulge myself, there's music of Erich Wolfgang Korngold. And Daniel, I know you love this music too. Even before I looked at the program recently, I've already seen The Prince and the Pauper this month, as well as The Constant Nymph, two Korngold scores. So it's a huge opportunity to hear a live performance of this great composer.
Yeah, he's really a wonderful composer. And he was a very young composer when he wrote this particular suite.
How old was he?
I believe he was 19 years old. And he was the greatest Wunderkind in Vienna since Mozart. And he was so much so that when Mahler heard his music the first time, apparently he was pacing back and forth, muttering under his breath, "A genius, a genius." And then there's a great a letter that Richard Strauss wrote to Korngold's father, saying about how dangerous his talent was and how dangerous this precociousness was, and you have to be so careful because this is a dangerous level of skill and ability. And by the time he wrote this piece, he had already received commissions from the Gewandhaus Orchestra, the Vienna Philharmonic. Conductors like Furtwängler were playing his music. And the final part of the introduction is that's always interesting to me, is that this music is at close to 15 years before he ever wrote a Hollywood score. So if you say it sounds like Hollywood, there's a reason, because he is the father of that Hollywood sound. And so I love this music. I think it's charming music. It's music that shows you what life might have been like and what music and art might have been like had those world wars not happened and had the cultural aesthetics not changed into 12-tone music and into this very stark and austere modernism. And so I think it's one of those, like, this might have been what it might have been if the trajectory of the art form continued in that direction.
How curious. What, I'm following you, but you're also blowing my mind at the same time. So, if I could take a minute to change the subject briefly.
Yes.
To congratulate you, speaking of Hollywood, on the recent performances of Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yes, that was a lot of fun.
Hugely loved by everyone I talked to, and you must be getting very comfortable watching a screen and cues, and then conducting and cueing the orchestra.
Well, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, just because I know in the moment there's probably 1,000 decisions being made in my brain every second. So it's definitely exhilarating, and it's definitely a very fun experience for me because I enjoy the confines of being attached to the screen, and you can't take rubato where you're not supposed to. You can't take time and like slow it down or speed it up where you're not supposed to. However, within that confine, it's really fun to try to see how musical you can be and how much you can get the orchestra to play like it's just a normal concert. And so for me, that's the enjoyment that I get from doing that type of work.
Cyborg conducting.
Yeah.
This piece that starts the program has a Shakespearean title,
yes.
Much Ado About Nothing. So was this music associated with a staged version of the play?
Yes, there was quite a bit of competition for his music. Korngold found his personal voice writing for the stage, whether it was operas or incidental music, later for the big screen. And he found his ability to write is so incredibly crafted, and the craft is exquisite, but the message is always so dramatic. And in Much Ado About Nothing, it's a comedy, and he just brings that music to life, or brings the story to life so vividly through the music. And the track that we're about to play is this great moment. I feel like it's a miniature Mahler 7. And it's a grotesque funeral march, and that's the tempo marking. It's a grotesque funeral march, and what it is there's two towns watchmen that live in this town, and they're always bumbling around. They're quite incompetent, but somehow, despite their incompetence, they discover this dastardly plot to destroy the wedding of one of the characters in this play. And in this particular movement, they're going around town trying to solve all of this. But if you listen really closely, you hear like a parody of this dark funeral music, and you can hear them kind of bumbling around and accomplishing something despite their own incompetence.
I'm with Daniel Breyer on WMUK. He will conduct the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra Saturday, beginning at 8 p.m. at Chenery Auditorium. Details at kalamazoosymphony.com. Characters of Dogberry and Verges.
Yes.
These are two characters from a Shakespeare play so well outlined by Eric Wolfgang Korngold. In The Much Ado About Nothing Suite, which opens the program on Saturday night, my guests here today are conductor Daniel Breyer and soloist Pablo Sainz Villegas. We're about to talk about the guitar concerto, but again, a shout out to Korngold. Thank you for featuring that on the KSO season. That is one thing I love about the Kalamazoo Symphony, the mix of interesting pieces for those of us who have always loved classical music and want to keep exploring it and finding new pieces and new works and hearing great ones again. And also the offerings to people who just want to see a movie and have the experience of live music along with that. It's a great mix. And Daniel, you're a huge part of that, preparing each concert. So have rehearsals already begun? Today is Thursday.
Yes. We've already had some rehearsals, and tonight will be our first with Pablo, and we're very much looking forward to that. Putting together programs and rehearsing them is always a fun experience, and there's always so much work involved. There's a lot of stress involved because everyone wants to do their best, but there's always something rewarding about getting into a room with other people and playing music together, and that for me, I love that part of the rehearsal process, making sure that no matter what happens, even if it gets really there's tension, we're trying to get something, we want to get it just right, to just take a step back and go, we're just people playing together, and so I love this rehearsal process. Yeah.
I have stumbled over or forgotten to mention a big connection between Korngold and Elmer Bernstein. Is it Bernstein or Bernstein? Do you know?
I think it's Bernstein.
Bernstein.
Yes, I was in Santa Barbara where Elmer Bernstein lived, and they were giving me that differentiation between the two Bernstein.
He moved to Hollywood from New York,
yes.
I think,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very promising young conductor, composer mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, young conductor, composer, pianist, studied with Copland and Roger Sessions and some of the greatest composers of that generation. And it is often overlooked how skilled he was as a classical musician, as a pianist, and as a composer of concert music.
Because there's another big Bernstein yes. out there. But he worked in Hollywood for a number of decades, so he's best known for his film scores.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is a concerto he wrote for a specific soloist. You mentioned Christopher Parkening. About when did he write this piece?
Well, I'm not totally certain about the exact date. Probably in the late 90s?
Yeah, maybe 98, 99, I think, somewhere in that range. And from what I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Christopher, at the time, early in Christopher Parkening's career, Elmer Bernstein, now I've got that right, Elmer Bernstein was part of the Young Musicians Foundation in Los Angeles, and they had spotted Christopher and had provided some support for his career as a young man. And I think Christopher had asked him for a concerto and quite early, but then it wasn't until much later into the 90s when he finally was able to do it. Because if you haven't written a concerto for guitar, that's a very difficult task, isn't it?
It is, and the composer needs to have different skills to do that. First, he needs to know the guitar. The guitar is a very unique instrument. It is not very logical as the piano is, where you know the scales are. It's like every time is the repeated scales on the keyboard. On the guitar, it has its own way to work. Like the harp is a totally different paradigm of understanding the instrument. So you need to know the instrument, or you need to have someone you trust that is a guitarist and know the instrument. So it is a collaboration. And I think this was the case. And also you need to understand the nature and the essence of the instrument. So your orchestration is going to enhance the instrument and not to diminish the value of the instrument. So those are the two key elements to compose a guitar concerto: orchestration and knowing the instrument.
In a paragraph in these liner notes, Elmer Bernstein writes, "The guitar is an instrument that lives happily in the diatonic world. And I have made no attempt to force the instrument into what I would consider to be unnatural harmonic territory, and have instead elected to let the guitar sing comfortably and joyously where it feels most natural." And is this joyous? Is this comfortable?
It is. It is. And I think also it creates a good balance with the first piece, because this the guitar concerto, this Elmer Bernstein guitar concerto, is a happy piece. It's a piece from California, from Santa Barbara, and beautiful melodies, beautiful harmonies. You can feel and you can hear some of those soundtracks influence in the music, and that I don't know, it is a very American sound, I could say.
Mm-hmm. Well, Elmer Bernstein conducted a recording of this with Christopher Parkening, for whom it was written. Would you introduce our first movement, either one of you? I mean, Daniel, you've studied it a lot.
Yeah,
too.
I think one of the hallmarks of this particular concerto are these just sweeping, beautiful melodies that you don't even have to think about to enjoy. Whereas other music, maybe a composer will have a melody, but it's left open-ended so that they can develop it and play around with it. These are melodies, much like Tchaikovsky, that are just complete and need no development. And so the first movement is a great example of that. The center, the core of the movement is so tuneful. And I think one of the ways that he does such a great job of balancing the orchestra and the guitar is that he allows there to be this dialogue between soloist and orchestra. And it's actually rather infrequent for the orchestra and the soloist to be playing full out together all the time. And that he saves that for very special moments. And this first movement, I think, is a good example of how he solved the problems of writing for guitar and orchestra.
I'm with conductor Daniel Breyer and soloist Pablo Sainz Viegas, and the concert is Saturday at 8 p.m. at Chenery Auditorium. Details are at KalamazooSymphony.com.
Thank you.
That is the first movement of Elmer Bernstein's Concerto for Guitar, Christopher Parkening in that recording. And I am sitting here with the guitar soloist for Saturday's concert, Spanish guitarist Pablo Sáenz Villegas, and with conductor Daniel Breyer. They're preparing this full concerto for Saturday night. And the afterwards, which is a new feature at KSO Concerts, stick around and talk to the musicians. I think you'll be getting a lot of comments on people hearing, seeing films, seeing scenes as they listen to this music. It's it's enjoyable that way. I mean, we all had something in our minds as we were listening along.
And it's no problem to just enjoy it. I mean, it's not music that's made for you to sit there and ponder the greater philosophical questions of life. It's music that's just meant to enrich you and just nurture you and have, you know, and just enjoy these melodies and enjoy seeing Pablo and seeing the orchestra and hearing how it all comes together. And if you see movie scenes in your mind, that's perfect. That's great. There's no wrong way to listen to it.
One other thing I noticed in the liner notes was Elmer Bernstein started off his paragraph with, this was music created out of friendship. Mm-hmm. Old friendships and new friendships, that is something that you can think about and celebrate even as you're performing the Elmer Bernstein Guitar Concerto.
Actually, the last movement of the concerto, the title is Celebration. So it's about celebration, that friendship. And art is about sending a message. And I think Elmer Bernstein, you know, was mm-hmm. very defined with that celebration and that message.
Would you, since we can't hear the full concerto, would you describe the second movement and a little bit of the third as well?
Well, it's a second movement of a concerto it brings you somewhere else. It brings you to a much more intimate place, and he does it in a great way. And the guitar is also a perfect instrument to tell you story whispering. It's like inviting you to come closer. And the second movement has a beautiful cadenza. That explores the different thematic elements of the second movement, and then, you know, brings it into a very explosive ending, which invites the third movement, the celebration. And the celebration is in a kind of a rondo. The theme comes back again and again, and it is beautiful. It puts smile on your face just listening to it. And to celebrate music, to celebrate humanity, to celebrate what we are. We are people that we feel, and we can connect with other human beings through music, which is the language of the emotions.
Sometimes in solo concertos, composers will often pick soloists out of the orchestra and have them interact with the soloists. I'm wondering if you can think of any particular lines or interesting things that happen as a duet, perhaps?
There are several moments where the clarinet is playing, moving to the oboe. There's a few little trumpet, very small, short ones. And he does often make sure that if the orchestra's playing, that Pablo doesn't have to, you know, overpower the orchestra. And so often you're getting, you know, soloist and then orchestra and then soloist and then orchestra. But there's these beautiful moments when everything comes together and there's these beautiful themes. There's a few times where the woodwinds will be playing the melody, and then all of a sudden you just take over. And then all that's left is this beautiful sound of the strings. And you know, just really delicate touches like that make this a fun concerto to put together.
And that's the beauty of playing with an orchestra or playing with other musicians. It is an invitation sometimes. It is a disruptive moment sometimes. It's like any relationship. And it's like, you know, it's like inviting and sometimes mm-hmm. discussing and sometimes making love.
or arguing.
Yes.
Or arguing.
Do you often have a chance to play chamber music with five or less musicians?
Yes, I do, and I love it. And actually, when I was in my early 20s, I did a lot of chamber music, playing contemporary music.
New music.
It was a group in Spain. We played George Crumb, and we played Helmut Lachmann. And
You still playing Helmut Lachmann?
So it was a beautiful learning experience for me. And there's nothing like playing with other musicians, because you create a space all together of collaboration, of music, of mutual understanding, and that's also what life is about. Teamwork makes dream work.
The Italian Boccherini ended up in Madrid and incorporated guitar into some of his chamber pieces.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's very smart of him when he did that, because he was able to find part of his inspiration where he was, and finding his voice around himself. So he was in Spain. He was living in Spain for a long time, working for the king at that time. So it's like, oh, the fandango, that's something unique from Spain. I'm from Italy, but why not incorporating the guitar and the fandango in a chamber music group? So music does it in a very organic and natural way. Mm-hmm. Music moves through cultures, through different idiomatic languages, in a very smooth way, because that's what it does the best. It's expressing the emotions of different countries and different people through sound.
The Kalamazoo Symphony is in concert Saturday at 8 o'clock, and details on this concert are at their website, kalamazoosymphony.com. Now we have to go to a very specific music capital of the world in the 18th century, and that's Vienna, Austria. Daniel, you'll be finishing this concert with Schubert's Fifth Symphony.
Yes, and it's one of those symphonies that it's very hard not to just love it, because
The whole flute line in the beginning, that's all I need.
it's a master at work, and he's only 19 years old. He's in his teens still. He's at this point in his life, he's trained as a classicist, as a classical era composer. He's, steeped in this tradition, but he's exploring all this incredible romantic literature and arts, and he's got this circle of friends. It's almost like a cult like following. They all really loved Schubert, and he wasn't well known in Vienna, but he was in his circle of friends. He was the big shot, and they had all of these what we now call Schubertiads, these gatherings. They were parties. You'd come together and you'd maybe share a poem that you wrote, and then someone would play some chamber music, and maybe a few people would be sight reading something. And there are records of these parties, and it sounds very high class right now, but I can assure you that if you were a parent at the time, you'd be discouraging your young people from attending these parties, because these were young people. They were having parties, and so out of this whole kind of aesthetic, he's really stretching into romanticism, and he's trying to figure out how to make it happen in the music. And what you hear in this particular symphony is him just heading in that direction. And so it sounds at first listen like late Mozart, but then you start to hear what he's doing with the harmonies. You have a minuet that begins in a minor key, which is, that's quite a crazy thing to do. And you hear these harmonies that are increasingly dissonant and increasingly expressive. And so it's just a wonderful piece. And if you have to hear a symphony for the first time, it might be the best symphony to... there's certainly no better symphony to hear for the first time if you wanted to hear a symphony. It's just a great piece of music.
The way in which he pushes the boundary or envelope is very subtle to my ear.
It's very subtle.
It's so lovable on first hearing that I cannot hear a rebel in the music. if I were to spend a month listening only to Haydn symphonies, I might get a sense of it.
Hear it in these the smallest little details, like he loves the sonority of bassoon and the first violins playing together.
Well, that's a bit odd.
And that's a bit odd for the time. But it's such a beautiful sound. And so I think where you hear him leaning into romanticism is in the darkness that he finds. It's a very sunny, optimistic piece of music. But at every turn, there's always a cloud passing through.
Oh, before we go, and we'll be listening to this first movement because I insist on the first movement. When I saw the opening concert of the season where Mr. Querti conducted, weren't the position of the the strings set up differently from last season?
One of the things with this, the setup of an orchestra, and I could talk about this for hours because I
keep it down.
I love this, right? Yes, I will. The traditional setup that people think is traditional, where you have firsts and from the conductor's left, firsts and then seconds all together, first violins and second violins, and then violas and then cellos. That actually did not become a standardized setup until around the 50s. And it's really actually because of the advent of the recording technologies, because you had to separate the treble from the bass in order to get a good capture in the early equipment.
Yeah.
And so if you go through history and you look at all of the orchestra has been set up in hundreds of different ways. This week, because we have the Bernstein Concerto, we're going to be set up in the traditional way. But there's something very beautiful and fantastic when you have the violins divided across the stage. Last year when we did Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, I made sure that we did that because that's exactly what he imagined in his mind. And when we do Sibelius later this season, it'll be the same thing, and Tchaikovsky as well. So it is a direction that we're moving is when we're doing music from a certain period that will benefit from it, we will definitely do that.
Well, Daniel Breyer and Pablo Sainz Villegas, thank you for previewing your Saturday night concert with me. Listeners, tickets are available at KalamazooSymphony.com. There are season subscriptions, single tickets. There's a whole lot on offer at KalamazooSymphony.com. And enjoy your concert, young men.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.